When you see the package that says disease-proof, something inside you might want to jump at the chance to apply that term to yourself. If you could take a pill to make yourself disease-proof, would you? Well, it's not that easy. Disease-proof is the title of a book about the things we can do, and it's much more than taking a pill, to keep us relatively healthy into our later years. Dr. David Katz wrote it. He's a preventive medicine specialist, the founder of two research centers, the author of piles of articles, papers, and textbook chapters, and the editor-in-chief of the journal Childhood Obesity, and a frequent guest in the media on health issues, which is what he is today on the Jefferson Exchange. Dr. Katz, welcome.
So good to be with you, Jeffrey. Thank you.
You start talking about the media and the what I'll call the medical breakthroughs reported, because that's the title we had to apply in, when I was in commercial TV. What is the problem you see with the way that medical breakthroughs are so often reported in the mainstream media?
Well, you know, there tend to be distortions introduced when we translate any scientific advance to pop culture. But I think all too often, Jeffrey, we're playing to that wishful thinking we all have that, you know, the things we want most in life will come to us on a silver platter. So we get a lot of false promises, magical thinking, and quick fixes. And in my experience, I've been taking care of patients for 20 years. I interact with lots of people doing public speaking all around the country. I actually think common sense really is common. I think people have good heads on their shoulders. I think we just selectively turn it off when we really want to believe something. And, you know, we want to believe we can have our cake and eat it too. We want to believe we can be healthy without eating well or exercising. We actually know it isn't true. But one of the reasons we're unwilling to embrace the truth is we know what, but most people simply don't know how. It just feels like you can't get there from here. So, you know, I think the media are playing to that. Tell the people what they want to hear, you know, afflict the comforted and comfort the afflicted and, you know, that routine. So there's a lot of that going on. But then those of us who really feel like, you know, there is an empowering truth here, we actually can eliminate 80% of all chronic disease. There is no rocket science involved. You actually can do this. One of the challenges is we have to break through the clutter. And by the way, Jeffrey, thank you so much for doing the interview. I appreciate it because, you know, I think it's hard for the truth to break through. The truth is incredibly empowering. It really could set us free of most chronic disease and make our lives better. But it's competing with magical thinking and silver bullets and scapegoats and panaceas, and, you know, it's hard to rise above that clutter.
Is your point, then, that the basics really are a bit more simple than it? I mean, they're not quite as simple as, like, you know, eat acai berries and you'll be happy for the next 100 years, but that it just really is about applying common sense to everyday life?
Well, yes and no. I'm an equestrian. I do hunter-jumper riding, and one of my riding instructors for many years has pointed out that sitting pretty on a horse jumping over fences is simple. That doesn't mean it's easy, and I would say getting to health in the modern world is just that way. Actually, yes, it's very simple. Eat well, be active, don't smoke, get enough sleep, manage your stress, have people in your life you love. I mean, frankly, you cover those bases, you're pretty much there. And the point we make in the book, and we cite all the relevant science to back this up, that doesn't just immunize you against chronic disease, heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, dementia, all the bad stuff. It actually alters the expression of our genes. It's incredibly powerful medicine. It's simple, but it actually isn't easy. And we rely far too heavily in our society and in our dialogue on the notion of willpower, as if just wanting it could get us there. But that isn't true about anything. You know, if you want to use a computer, you have to learn how. If you want to drive a car, you have to learn how. If you want to ride a bike, you have to learn how. There is a skill set involved, and I call that skill power. Most people just don't have it. You know, most people just kind of hope for health, and then when it's too hard, they give up. They go on a diet, they come off the diet, as opposed to recognizing this is a truly worthwhile thing. It's fundamentally simple, like driving a car, riding a bike. But it isn't necessarily easy until you have the right skills. I want to acquire the skills. That's what this book is about. I want to pay forward my skill set. Everybody can manage this, but they've got to shrug off the magical thinking and say, okay, this is about skill power. I want it. I want to share it with my family. I do want to immunize myself against chronic disease. You started out, Jeffrey, by saying, you know, a pill. I often include that reference when I talk on this topic. Imagine if there were a pill that were stunningly free of side effects, shockingly inexpensive, accessible to all, available in bountiful supply, safe enough for children and octogenarians alike, and taken once daily for the rest of your life would reduce your lifetime risk of heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, dementia, etc., etc., by 80%. I mean, what would you do first? Call your doc to get a prescription for the stuff, or call your broker so you could own stock in the company that's making it? You know, either would be a very good idea, but for the fact that there is no such pill. In my opinion, there never will be any such pill. But lifestyle is exactly that medicine, and the power to exercise it is in your hands.
So it sounds like what you're frequently up against in medicine is particularly in America, the give-it-to-me-now thing. You know, I want the new phone. I want the new cool device, whatever. And it's just not as simple as, for example, wrapping yourself in saran wrap and eating a candy bar. You can't really lose weight that way.
Well, if you stand on one leg, actually. Yeah, you're exactly right, Jeffrey. So, you know, we're a quick fix, silver bullet, active ingredient kind of society. So that's part of what I'm up against. But, you know, it's really an issue of cultural orientation, because think about it. We don't treat wealth that way for the most part. In fact, you know, if you want to laugh at get-rich-quick schemes, you watch old honeymooner episodes. I mean, you know, it's silly. You watch some doofus trying to get rich quick, and you roll your eyes thinking, you know, the only way to protect your money is the slow, steady, take good care of it, invested way. Well, all we really need to do is wrap our minds around the fact that we have to treat health more like wealth, that there's a skill set involved. There are genuine experts. Not everybody who has something to say on the topic is worth listening to. It's a worthwhile prize. If we invest in it, we can cultivate it. We can get there from here.
So we have wealth management. Now we're talking about health management for ourselves. The book is called Disease Proof. Dr. David Katz, its author, our guest. We will join him again in just a few moments, and you can join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange. Back here on the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. David Katz and you in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today, Dr. David Katz, a doctor as in MD. He's also an MPH and got several other sets of initials after his name. He is the principal author of the book Disease Proof, The Remarkable Truth About What Makes Us Well. The skills you need to slash your risk of heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and more by 80%. You can join our discussion on the Jefferson Exchange with your thoughts about things that may have helped your life get as long as it has. I know from previous conversations we've had with you that quite a few of our listeners are up there in years, and so share your stories with us about what it took to get there. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Dr. Katz, the first study you cite in the book is the Potsdam study from 2009. What was that about?
Oh, it's amazing. And by the way, Jeffrey, you were a little glib about that alphabet soup after my name. My mother's very proud of all those initials, so you be careful there.
Okay.
All right, so in 2009, in the Annals of Internal Medicine, Dr. Earl Ford and colleagues at the Centers for Disease Control published results of survey research. They interviewed 23,000 adults who happened to be living in and around Potsdam, Germany, which is mostly irrelevant. And they asked them about four factors. They asked them, do you smoke, yes or no? Do you eat well, yes or no? Habitual intake of fruits, vegetables, and whole grains and such. Are you active on a regular basis, exercise every week, yes or no? And is your weight well controlled, yes or no? And then they compared the two ends of the spectrum. So they compared, I don't smoke, I eat well, I'm active, my weight's controlled, to I smoke, eat badly, don't exercise, my weight's out of control. The people with four good factors, just those four factors, over the course of their lives, this was a study that examined the entire lifespan, had an 80% lesser likelihood of all major chronic disease, heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, dementia, and so on, 80%. And if you flip the switch on any one of these behaviors from bad to good, the lifetime probability of any major chronic disease goes down about 50%. But fire on all four cylinders, and this is really what we address in the book, your lifetime risk of all chronic disease is reduced 80%. And there is nothing in all of medicine to rival that. You know, the Nobel Prizes in medicine for this year were just announced. That's always an exciting time for those of us in science. But, you know, there's never been a Nobel Prize in medicine that offered an 80% reduction in all chronic disease. You have the latent power to provide that for yourself. And so, again, the issue here is we have long known about this truth. It's not in dispute. It's not one of the controversial things in modern medicine. There's been a repetitive drumbeat of publications over 20 years replicating the findings by Ford and others. So we know this is true, and we even know the what. We know what the recipe is. again, the missing element is how, and how you get from here to there. You know, it's a question of navigation and locomotion, and there's a skill set involved, and that's been missing. And if we fix that, there is a luminous prize within reach for ourselves, for the people we love, for our children. You know, imagine a world where 8 times in 10, those terrible days, the phone ringing and someone we love is in the emergency room or the ICU, those days don't happen 8 times in 10. You know, it's not remote and statistical. Studies, you know, they can be very compelling, but it seems like, well, you know, this is about some public that I don't know. It's not true. I mean, if you or someone you love has been touched by heart disease or cancer or stroke or diabetes, if you can put a face to that, and most of us can, what an 80% reduction in the lifetime risk of chronic disease means is there are 8 chances in 10 that bad day, that horrible phone call, that anxious visit to the hospital would never have happened. And it means we can bequeath to our children a world where 8 times in 10 those bad days don't happen.
I guess where the problem comes in American medicine, though, is that people do still think in terms of things that'll fix us. And in fact, you get into a section in the book where you point out that we've got simultaneously more medical technology and sicker people. And I don't know if you draw the lines as much as I'm about to, but it seems like it's often because we believe that those great medical techniques and the magic bullets will save us.
I completely agree, Jeffrey. I think we over-medicalize. Actually, I wrote a piece this morning on LinkedIn called Zombie Years. The life expectancy in the U.S. actually has been going up. And, you know, that we've long had the concern that our children would have a shorter life expectancy than we do, and that may still be true. We don't really know for sure yet. But even if they don't, whether or not we are taking years from life, what we know is happening, without a doubt, is that we're taking life from years. And there actually have been studies, in particular the Institute of Medicine, compared the health span in the United States. That's years of healthy living. And you know, frankly, that's what health is for. It's for living, you know, living better, having a better life. That's why this matters so much. So compared our years of healthy living to countries around the world, and we're doing very poorly, and the gap between life expectancy and health expectancy is widening, which means we're spending more years living badly with serious chronic disease. And so while modern medicine is really good at keeping us alive when things get truly desperate and really good at fixing acute problems, what it can't do is give us health. You know, it's interesting. We have all this hullabaloo about health care reform, but honestly, it's disease care reform. And, you know, I say that with no shame as a doctor. When you're sick, you need guys like me. But I don't build health. You know, health is built in the places we live and love and learn and work and play and pray. You know, we don't spend much time with doctors there. It's not built in hospitals. So, yes, we rely far too much on fix me after it's broken. But, you know, frankly, that's in all the king's horses and all the king's men scenario. We can't put vitality back together again. We're good at keeping people from dying. We're not good at helping people really live. You've got to do that for yourself. And I think you have to be empowered to do that. You need the skill set that experts have, and that can be shared.
Let us take some calls, beginning with Anne in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. David Katz, the principal author of Disease Proof.
Oh, Dr. Katz, you're a man that's right up my street. I'm 71 years old. I'm 5'4". I weigh 128. I've never spent a night in a hospital. I gave up dinner 25 years ago because I have a really low metabolism. The only prescription drug I take is for low thyroid. I horseback ride twice a week. I bicycle at least four times a week. And I hike. And so anyway, my comment has to do with transportation. I think that getting out people off their rears, out of their cars, onto their feet or a bicycle seat. And we need more, you know, Eugene's one of the premier places for bicycling. We have 36 miles of off-street bicycling lanes and pedestrians and bicyclists. We could use at least twice that much. You know, we need good connections. We have a couple of different systems that are isolated from one another. And for communities to spend more money on places for pedestrians and bicyclists, in the long run, society would reap a really big harvest by lower health care costs, because people would simply be healthier longer.
Oh, health through transportation planning. Good point. Thanks for bringing it up, Ann. And Dr. Katz, your thoughts?
Well, first of all, Ann, thanks for calling in. And, you know, I hope we get a chance to bike or horseback ride together someday and, you know, up that street we share. I totally agree. And actually, I think the world needs to change. I think it needs to change so that both healthy eating and routine physical activity are the norm. We have a whole section of Disease Proof about here's how the world could change. And frankly, my two-decade-long career in public health is about that. And in the book, we even describe many of the programs we've developed and offer all around the world to help make that happen. But, you know, so Anne's got the skill power and the formula, and there are others who do. But most of our society doesn't. And while the world should change, and that includes changes in transportation, I completely agree, I'm not going to hold my breath, and I don't think you should either. So the point is, in the world as it is today, we can talk about what needs to change, but we can't wait for that to happen to protect our own health. And so the alternative is to have the relevant skill set to deal with the world the way it is. Now, again, Ann has it. I have it. My wife has it. My five children have it. I mean, people who learn it and have it endowed to them, they have it, and they can be healthy in spite of it all. So I agree. I think transportation can change in ways that encourage physical activity. We should all advocate for that. I think we can get there from here, but that's going to take a while. And I don't want more people succumbing unnecessarily to heart disease, cancer, stroke, and diabetes in the meantime. So that's where the skill set you can start exercising right now comes in. And so, you know, in terms of what Ann was talking about, Jeffrey, you know, the skills we describe are how do you fit physical activity into any kind of day? You know, if you've got a long day in the office, if you've got a crazy, hectic schedule, if you live in a neighborhood where it's not safe or convenient to be outside, if you've got kids, if you don't have kids, if you hate spandex, I mean, you know, whatever the barriers are, is there a way to fit fitness into your daily routine? And the answer is yes. There are all sorts of ways. And it can be the gym, but it doesn't have to be the gym. It can be indoors. It could be outdoors. It could be dance. It can be an activity with your children. And there are programs to facilitate it, even video-based programs you can access on a smartphone to fit activity bursts into your daily routine in the office. We go through all of that, and that's what I mean by skill power. It's not, gee, I have to exercise, I'm exhausted, I'm going to skip today. It's, I have a wide inventory of options for fitting fitness in, and there's something that works every day, no matter where I am, what I'm doing, or how I'm feeling. That's skill power. I can make this work.
Dr. David Katz is our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. The book he co-wrote with Stacy Colino is called Disease Proof, The Remarkable Truth About What Makes Us Well. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange and talk about the process of perhaps eliminating 80% of chronic diseases through physical activity and good diet. Join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Dennis and Eugene. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the Exchange.
Okay, here's my question, doctor. I hear you talking, and I hear people saying this stuff all the time, but it isn't that 80% we need to worry about, it's that 20%. And that's 20% is what gets us all. And it's either going to be heart disease or cancer or dementia or something like that. So in a way, I sort of feel like what you're saying is if you do all these things, that's not going to happen to you. But eventually, it's going to happen to you. And so that's my problem with this kind of talk, because we all face the same demise. Sooner or later, we're out of here, and it really doesn't matter much how we leave. We're just leaving.
Well, that is for certain. Dennis, thanks for that, and appreciate the call. Dr. Katz, then, you know, you can still get cancer, obviously, even if you're being really healthy and you're exercising your diet. So what to what Dennis is saying here?
Well, first of all, Dennis, thank you for calling. I totally disagree with you. Absolutely disagree that, it, you know, since we're all going to check out someday, it doesn't matter how. Totally disagree. You know, frankly, there has long been the aspiration in medicine that we could, and this is a technical term, but rectangularize the morbidity curve. And to explain that in simple, what it means is live in robust good health until one night we go to sleep and don't wake up at 80 or 85 or 87 or 79 or whatever it is. And, you know, people like Anne, frankly, You know, that's what happens. Nobody's saying we're going to live forever. We are all going to check out, but it absolutely matters what happens between now and then. And no, it's not the 20% that matters. What an 80% reduction in risk of chronic disease means is, you know, the odds are very much in your favor. You'll never get this stuff. But, you know, let me make the important concession to Dennis. The way I think of protecting our health and preventing chronic disease is as if our body is the vessel, the ship, if you will, and we're the captain. Now, you know, captains control ship and sail, but not wind and wave. Nobody can give you 100% guarantee. You could be the best damn captain that ever sailed the seas, and there could be some monster storm that causes your ship to capsize and go down. Health is the same way. There are things that can happen, no matter what care you take of yourself, that can get the better of you. You could get a serious disease, no question. But if you have a well-captained ship, the probability of a safe crossing goes up enormously. Same with health. The odds shift dramatically in your favor, and all that really matters to you is, did you make it safely across or not? It's your life, and if your life is spent living in robust, good health, well, then you win. And what this is about is you're much more likely to win. Many more of us will have a really good life. It's not 100% guarantee. Anybody who tells you they can give you that can also sell you a bridge while they're at it. But it's pretty darn good, and it's better than anything in all of medicine can offer. And frankly, it's not just about how long we live. We are all going to die eventually. But it's about how we live, and that can be so much better. I mean, there are just millions upon millions of us living with serious chronic disease in this country, and many more of our children will do that, beginning at every younger age, unless we get our act together. The Centers for Disease Control is currently projecting that should current trends persist, by about the middle of this century, 1 in 3 Americans will be diabetic. Now, there are all about 27 million diagnosed diabetics in the U.S. today, and we already have trouble paying the bills. 1 in 3 means well over 100 million. I mean, this is a threat to us. It's a threat to our children and our families. It's a threat to our communities. And frankly, it's a threat to national security. I don't know how we're going to pay that bill when there are 100 million diabetics. None of this needs to happen. And I think that makes a huge difference. I mean, you know, if there were 20 million diabetics in the U.S. versus 100 million, are we really saying that doesn't matter? I think it matters to the 80 million. So an 80% reduction in chronic disease is really important. So, Dennis, thanks for calling, but you and I just disagree.
Let's take another one from N-Word in Ash Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. David Katz. His book is Disease Proof.
Yeah, my comment was culture sickness. You know, that the sum total of human behavior and thought defines our culture, and we've inherited a very sick one. Aside from my comment, I was reading a book that was a translation that was published in 1936. It mentioned that the normal person lives maybe 60, 70 years, but a natural person will live 120 years. What they were talking about is how we sophisticates is what they called them. They when people become more sophisticated or they have all the easy things met, you know, they're not laboring all the time and they sit around and they enjoy life like they called it the royal dynasty. You know, it's like you have back in this is a translation from Arabic. So it's like these Arab cultures, they had these dynasties, and the first dynasty kind of had it together. They knew what the principles of health were, basically, and people were healthy. But then but they acquired more wealth, they sort of squandered it away, to the point where the next generation didn't have the knowledge, you know. And by the time the third and fourth generation gets around, it's just they're totally debauched, you know.
All right.
It was about natural living as opposed to royal living.
All right, let's take it on from there. Thanks for the call, N-Word. Dr. Katz? Thoughts?
Well, I agree that, you know, the problem is cultural. You know, essentially, we've got a junk food culture, we've got a fast food culture, we've got a labor-saving technology culture. And, you know, you sort of look at that and say, well, hang on just a second. I mean, we created this culture, so I guess we must be crazy. Maybe we want to kill ourselves. And the reality is that we can explain all of this. Throughout most of human history, calories were relatively scarce and hard to get, and physical activity was unavoidable. It didn't require gym membership or specialized footwear. It was called survival, and everybody did it every day. And then we set our ingenious Homo sapien brains to the task of making life a little easier. We wanted a more reliable, more stable, more varied food supply. Well, we not only fixed that problem, we overshot, and now we're all drowning in calories. And we wanted a little less arduous demand on our muscles every day. And again, we didn't just fix the problem, we overshot. Now we don't have to do anything but twiddle our thumbs. So, you know, now we live in a world of our own devising where physical activity is scarce and hard to get and calories are unavoidable. So, you know, Houston, we have a problem. So culture is the problem, but we've got to fix it at the individual level. And we can talk more about what that skill power is.
Indeed we will, and thanks for leading us up to the break. The book is called Disease Proof, The Remarkable Truth About What Makes Us Well. Dr. David Katz, its principal author and our guest on The Exchange. We'll come back and take more of your phone calls and emails with Dr. Katz in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Dr. David Katz, doctor as in MD and MPH, FACPM and FACP. He tells us already his mother's very proud of all these initials after his name. He is the principal author of the book Disease Proof, The Remarkable Truth About What Makes Us Well, the skills you need to slash your risk of heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and more by 80%. You can join our discussion on The Exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. David, I want to come back to something you mentioned earlier, which is about genes, because there is some material in the book about certain studies that look at what happens within genes when we do live healthier lifestyles. Can we actually change our genetic makeup, even if it's slightly, just by being somewhat more healthier and applying the skill power you talk about?
In the ways that matter, absolutely yes. Jeffrey, you know, we don't change our genes per se, but we change what our genes do, and that's what matters. You know, genes are not destiny. They essentially are, you know, a recipe that programs us to make certain proteins and develop in particular ways, but their environment changes their behavior just as our environment influences ours. So there is scientific evidence to show that, for example, if you apply lifestyle as medicine, you can suppress the expression of genes that promote cancer. You can upregulate the expression of genes that suppress cancer. And so we can change our fate at the very level of our genes. We've long thought about the nature-nurture debate. You know, where is the greater power center? Is it the genetic hand I'm dealt, or is it how I play that hand? We reviewed the relevant science, and the answer is we can nurture nature. We can absolutely change the expression of our genes. There are instances where genes are our destiny, things like Huntington's chorea. They're very rare. For the most part, all of the action is in the realm of what we call epigenetics. It's how what we do and the exposures we have influence the way our genes behave, and we can change that dramatically. We can make a 180-degree about-face and change our fate at the level of our genes. So importantly, Jeffrey, the things that have come up in the discussion so far, there have been questions about environment, transportation. Completely agree that's important, but it's not going to change fast. Culture, completely agree that's important. It's not going to change fast. Genes, completely agree they're important, but we can't change the genes we have. But with lifestyle, we can compensate for the environment and make the best of it. We can create a culture at the level of our own home, and we can defy the prevailing unhealthy trends in our culture, and we can alter the behavior of our genes. And this isn't controversial. There are no false promises here, and I'm not saying I can do this for you. We have to be partners. I know the skill set. I can teach the skills. You've got to sign up to learn them. And again, not rocket science, but not effortless either. You want effortless, go watch Harry Potter and get a dose of magic. This isn't magic. This is the real deal. And it can compensate for all these things, and it can reduce the lifetime risk of all chronic disease by 80% and help control your weight forever and do it in a way where you can pay it forward to the people you love. That's the power of skill power. And what I'd like to do, if it works for you, Jeffrey, is give an example of what I mean by
Please.
Skill power. So, think of one of the common problems that makes it hard to eat well. Because, in many ways, that's the complicated variable here. Everybody knows they shouldn't smoke and it's hard to quit, but, it's a yes or no decision. Everybody basically knows, exercise is is, you know, maybe hard to fit into your daily routine, but they kind of know how to do it. Eating well tends to be the bigger challenge. And one of the common problems people have is, well, you know, I crave the stuff I'm eating now. And in particular, people have a sweet tooth. So, you know, the traditional approach to I've got a sweet tooth, but I should eat better is I'm going to give up dessert. I'm going to, you know, give up some of my favorite sweet foods. That's a totally willpower-based enterprise. So you give up foods you love, you really miss them, you hang in there as long as your willpower lasts, and then when your willpower wears out, you fall off the wagon. And you go back to eating the way you did before and maybe twice as much and, you know, gain back any weight you lost. And that's very typical. I don't think that's anybody's fault. It's just, you know, it's the best most people can do. Well, here is the skill power approach to that same problem. In every supermarket in the country, there are, and I mean this quite literally, by the way, you know, we've reviewed the labels, there are pasta sauces with a higher concentration of added sugar than ice cream topping. And sitting right next to them on the shelf and looking much the same as a jar of pasta sauce that, by the way, tastes just as good, that doesn't have any added sugar. Make that trade up without spending more money, and you've taken a number of grams of sugar out of your daily diet. Do the same thing when you buy chips and crackers and bread and salad dressing and other condiments. From soup to nuts, you've taken gram after gram after gram of what I call stealth sugar out of your diet, and you haven't touched dessert. You haven't made any change that was hard to make, nothing that you regretted. But the result of this is you're now bathing your taste buds in so much less sugar every day that they wake up. Essentially, your taste buds go through rehab. They become much more sensitive to sugar, and after about a week or two of these easy changes, suddenly that dessert you used to love and crave actually tastes too darn sweet. You don't even like it as much anymore, and now it's time to improve your dessert. So this would be a skill power-based approach, and this kind of approach works, you know, for all of the challenges to eating well and all of the challenges to being active. It unburdens willpower. You need willpower. You have to care to get started. But then you go the distance with skill power, and it doesn't make it effortless, but it makes it completely manageable.
I should point out, too, and you know, it's not that this is an unknown thing, but you really can cheapskate yourself to poor nutrition. For a while, I was buying tortilla chips because of the price, and then I realized, oh, for a dime more, I get half of the saturated fat.
Well, and you know, ultimately, you spend that money at the endocrinologist getting your diabetes treated, right? So, yeah, I mean, talk about penny wise and pound foolish. But we've actually done research, Jeffrey. I mean, you know, I think all of us have heard more nutritious food costs more. We've studied it. We published our findings in the journal Public Health Nutrition. Actually, it's not true. It's true some of the time. Some of the time, more nutritious food actually costs less. The big problem is most people don't have the skill set to reliably identify the more nutritious food that doesn't cost more. Well, we provide that skill set in the book. We give specific resources, tools, examples. We actually have hundreds of foods in the book scored using a system called NUVAL, 1 to 100, the higher the number, the more nutritious the food. And this system has been correlated against health outcomes, including all-cause mortality.
And there are recipes as well, we should point out.
And there are recipes as well. Yeah, I mean, basically the idea here was, and we actually lay it out this way, a day in the life of you and your fork, a day in the life of you and your feet. In other words, what are all the ways a person and food can come together? And what are all the ways that can go badly? And what are all the relevant skills to make every one of those occasions go well, whether you're eating at home or preparing a meal or eating out or eating on the run or traveling through airports or, you know, whatever the situation is, what do you need to know to make it go well so that you can love food that loves you back? And by the way, that's the sweet spot with all of this. You know, it's not anybody wagging their finger, you should do this, I'm a doctor, listen to me. You're the boss. The purpose of health is for living. And so, you know, there wouldn't be much value in eating well for good health if that meant being miserable with the food we eat every day. I think food should taste good. I think it should be fun. But frankly, being healthy and vital also is fun. Healthy people have more fun. So the goal here is to love food that loves us back and get pleasure from eating good food and get pleasure from good health. So we go through all the different ways to get there from here, both with diet and physical activity, and then holistically. We look at tobacco, we look at sleep and stress and chronic pain and relationships and help people identify, you know, what's the right sequence for me to move through this to get the skills that I need, because I believe everybody can get there from here.
About 6 minutes left and about four phone calls. Let's see how many we can fit. We'll start with Jeannie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. David Katz, the principal author of Disease Proof.
Hi, quickly. Boy, I agree with so much of what you're saying, Doctor. I'm thinking it was George Burns that said, I would treated myself better if I knew I was going to live this long. Something to that effect. And I have friends who just use disease and illness almost like a badge. I say, well, would it be all right if you could fix that with some discipline? And as you said, it's simple, not easy. And your opinion on raw food versus dead food.
Raw food versus dead food. All right, thanks for that, Jeannie.
All right. Yeah, thank you very much, Jeannie. I've actually just completed a commission paper for Annual Reviews in Public Health called Can We Say What Diet is Best for Health? I'm also writing right now the third edition of a nutrition textbook for physicians called Nutrition and Clinical Practice. So I have a bird's eye view of the diet and health literature, and raw food figures in that. And the bottom line is I'm not dogmatic, and I don't think we should be. I argue for a separation of church and plate, and I think we get all too much religious zeal about my diet can beat your diet. The evidence supporting a basic theme of healthful human eating, which, by the way, Michael Pollan pretty much nails, eat food, real food, not too much, mostly plants, is overwhelming. But there's no evidence to show that eating all raw confers health benefits over eating some foods raw and some foods cooked. There's no evidence to show that, you know, eating vegan is reliably better for human health than eating Mediterranean. And so, you know, essentially, you're the boss. We know the theme of optimal eating, and we describe that in detail in the book. But there are all sorts of variations on the theme, and that's a good thing because it puts you in the driver's seat. So, you know, you can decide what diet best suits your life and your preferences. And yeah, I completely agree. You know, I mean, you could live forever or could just feel that way. It's not just about how long we live. It's about how well. And that's the real power of this.
Let's go to Peggy in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. David Katz.
Hi. You answered my first question. The second part of it would be, how do you feel about genetically modified food? Do you think that's an issue?
All right. Thanks for that, Peggy.
Thanks, Peggy. It's definitely an issue. I don't know exactly what to make of it, frankly. And I've written about this. You'll find a piece in the Huffington Post, Seeking Genetically Modified Perspective. Some of my colleagues who are extremely knowledgeable in this space are surprisingly defenders of GMO. And I won't tell you who they are because they don't want me to, but they would surprise you. And the issue is this. You know, in some cases, genetic modification makes produce available to people who otherwise wouldn't have any. It might lower the cost of produce for all of us by making fruits and vegetables resistant to a sudden frost, that sort of thing. With climate change, frankly, we may be more rather than less dependent on it. It's also possible at times that that genetic modification obviates the need for pesticides and such. So I'm ambivalent. I think, you know, if it's done badly, I think it can introduce proteins into the diet to which people have allergies. I think there are unintended consequences. On the other hand, I think it has potential to do good. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer here. I do favor labeling so people know what's going on, and those who just feel like I don't like this because I don't like it, they should at least have the option to try and navigate around it. But the rest of us should, I think, be open-minded skeptics about it. I don't think it's reliably all good, but I don't think it's necessarily all bad either.
Let us take a final call. We can squeeze this one in. Mary Lee in Applegate, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. David Katz.
Hi, thank you. I don't know if I can get over having fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, chronic pain syndrome, and then I have a bad leg, which means, like, right now I'm standing at a step. I'm about to go get in my car and leave, and I know that my legs collapse on me, but I think better than most out of a garden, and it's cold out here where I live at this time of year, and I seem to live closer to the elements in terms of not having much heat. The nights are cold, and I am alone. And sometimes I want to make a park course on my embankment, and it's hard for me to dig, and I'm weak. My muscles have weakened a lot. My leg muscles are very weak. They've deteriorated a lot. I don't even know how to build them up anymore, but I keep wanting to. And I live alone so that I can work it out for myself. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say, and I don't know how to get help within myself.
All right. Good question. Thanks for that, Marilee. Thoughts, Dr. Katz?
Yeah, Marilee, you know, it's challenging. And I run an integrative medicine center where we deal with challenging patients and difficult problems and use a brand of holistic care that I've described in writing a number of times. And the good news I have for you is that it's challenging, but not insurmountably so. And, you know, so I think the issue is, you know, you've got one problem leads to another. And I see this a lot. So, you know, I've got chronic pain. Pain keeps me up at night. I can't sleep. Because I can't sleep, I eat too much. Because I eat too much, I gain weight. Because I gain weight, my joints hurt more. And then I sleep less well. So, you know, that's kind of like circling the drain. Each problem, you know, makes every other problem worse. The solution is to reverse engineer that and fix one thing at a time and use the gains from each advance to invest in the next. I think the book can help you do that because we describe that approach there. But I think probably given your situation, you know, you want a doctor who does something like integrative or holistic medicine who can help troubleshoot this with you. What I want you to do, you know, I'm not going to make you any promise over the phone or a radio interview because I can't provide direct care, but keep the faith. There are ways to reverse engineer this difficult problem, and, you know, I think you can be healthier and enjoy your life.
I'll make the final question a yes or no one. You talked about fitting fitness into your day, and it looks like you really need to have about 30 minutes on average per day. Now, if, for example, you have this whole chapter on nooks and crannies, trying to fit the fitness into your schedule, can little bursts add up to that 30-minute workout? Can 3 10s equal to 30?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want me to just leave it a yes or no, then that's a yes, Jeffrey.
You can add a little more. We got a few
more. Okay. So, you know, I mean, the way I look at it, that's a floor. You know, more than 30 minutes is better, and having a longer bout of exercise is better. But, you know, essentially that's the point. So let's not make perfect the enemy of good. On those days when you can exercise more and for longer, great. But absolutely, you know, we can engineer into school or work there, whatever it is you do, a floor of 30 minutes. And, yes, 3 10-minutes add up to 30.
David Katz is the medical doctor and master of public health and a couple of other things, and a prolific author. His latest book with Stacy Colino, Disease Proof, The Remarkable Truth About What Makes Us Well. Dr. Katz, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Great to have you. Tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about the Healthy Food and Families program. Because it is Wednesday, we'll have our Vents Day session. We'll talk about acting locally on global warming, and we'll talk about the Supreme Court and campaign spending limits. Then at 9 o'clock, we'll talk about sex offender laws and problems with them in Oregon and elsewhere. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Find us at jeffexchange.org on Facebook or on Twitter. Our producer is Charlotte Duren, also today's engineer. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.